Well, HIPAA. We've all heard the term HIPAA, and many of us don't even understand what it really means. But we go into a doctor's office, and we put down, you know, our first name or our initial. Hey, L, you're up next. And nobody's supposed to know your last name, but everybody seems to know who I am. So I cannot protect myself. But I got to tell you, a case involving a Westport medical office's violation of HIPAA regulations has set a legal precedent here in the state of Connecticut. To tell us about it is Bruce Elstein from Goldman, Grutter and Woods. Thank you so much for being with us today here on WATR.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
So how important is this case? Because I've never really understood how much HIPAA can protect us all. I mean, I've seen, you know, people who will, write down their entire name when they're going to get stuck over it to Quest or whatever. I mean, do we as patients take it that seriously? Do doctors' offices take it seriously? And what was the basis for protecting, you know, all of our information, particularly when we're there on site? I know there's lots of reasons you don't want to communicate various things about somebody's medical condition, but it seems like at times we go to extraordinary means.
Well, that's true. HIPAA was enacted by the U.S. Congress back in 1996, and important to our case is that it has a privacy rule, which is really what you're talking about. And the privacy rule is that the information that we convey to our doctors in confidence are to be kept confidential. Now, giving a name, I don't think, is something that is all that important to protect, mm-hmm. but the medical information that we convey to our doctors in private is really the crux of our case. Congress realized in 1996 that this was a new and comprehensive law and charged the Department of Health and Human Services with rulemaking authority to enact a bunch of regulations. And the regulations tell the medical offices how they are to respond when requests are made for medical information. And they're very specific and particular on how and when disclosure can be made.
Okay, now, for example, when they'll call the home and they'll say, you know, if my wife picks up, oh, you know, we've got some test results for Larry, you know, and if she has not been designated or some, you know, means has been given to the office to give her that information, she can't get it, so I have to wait and call them back later. Those kinds of things, I'm sure, are at play here.
Yes, they were. And that's the rules that were enacted govern how and when you can make disclosures, and a person can designate someone as an appropriate person to convey the private health information to, in your example, to your wife, and that would be fine. But if you've not done that, or you've directed someone not to disclose, then they cannot.
Okay, now with the electronic medical records, and then I want to get back to the specific case here and the impact that this may have, you know, countrywide, even though Connecticut's kind of in the vanguard of this one. But tell us, you know, what it is that, you know, this law, you know, at the end of the day was meant to, you know, protect in that regard.
Well, it was very comprehensive, designed to make medical information more readily available to the medical providers who need it, mm-hmm. to exchange information to better patient care. But with it came the privacy rule, because they understood that because the information was now more readily available electronically, it was also more prone to wrongful disclosure or inadvertent disclosure. So they covered that with the privacy rule on how to keep it and maintain confidentiality.
Okay, now tell us what the impact is. If somebody knew that I had a certain condition and somehow it was shared with another office because it was electronically communicated so that my service could be seamless and so forth, and then somehow somebody hacked into that system or somehow found out that information, give us examples of how that could be harmful to an individual if somebody was going for a new job and yet they knew that they had a condition. I mean, you know, play it out for us.
Well, there's numerous ways that your private health information could be detrimental. If I have a certain condition, and I'll make one up, if I have diabetes mm-hmm. or I have a cancerous condition, an employer may want, you know, I may not want my employer to know that. They may not be entitled to know that private information. And if they were given access to it wrongfully, where I said don't disclose my records and they got access to it, they may deny me the right to work.
Okay, now is this something that we have to invoke our rights and privileges under this, or it just comes as a matter of fact that under HIPAA, I don't have to say don't do this. They know that they're not supposed to do this unless I exempt someone like my wife.
Exactly true. I mean, it's automatic. You don't need to do anything to get the protections that HIPAA provides to us.
Okay. Now, in the case that you were involved with, and this is an important case, explain it to us and why it is so important going forward.
Well, it's important because the rule before this case was that there was no way for a medical office to be taken to task for wrongfully disclosing medical information. The teaching of this case and the end result of this case is that the medical information that we provide to our doctors in private and in confidence will be kept that way, because if it is not, there's a harm that can befall the medical office.
Okay, so what would have happened, play this out, before this, the negligence in terms of, allowing, let's say a file was left on a desk and another patient picked it up, took a look at it, they happened to be neighbors with the previous patient, and they started telling the entire community about the problem that John or Joe had. But what would have been the, problem for the office prior to this, and what could be the problem for that negligence going forward?
Well, what happened before this case was the sole remedy a patient would have for a wrongful disclosure was to file a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services down in Washington. And at the time, it's different now, but at the time, the sole penalty that department could invoke was a $100 penalty.
$100. Okay.
$100 penalty.
Well, okay. Emily Byrne, she alleges that a Westport medical office violated her right to privacy. This was your case with Goldman, Grutter, and Woods. This is attorney Bruce Elstein. Tell us what the state Supreme Court said.
Well, we brought this action claiming negligence in the handling of her medical information. And it's a very sad and interesting case in that the medical office was told by my client not to disclose her medical information to a former boyfriend. And what happened was that she became pregnant with his child and broke off the relationship with him for a variety of reasons. She then informed the medical office not to disclose any medical information to this individual. What happened was he brought paternity cases against her in both Vermont and Connecticut, and in the Connecticut case, his attorney subpoenaed her medical file to court. Now, HIPAA has very specific requirements on what to do when you are faced with a subpoena. And the two hallmarks are, number one, notify the patient. And number two is seek to limit the disclosure to the absolute minimum necessary to cover the issue required when a court orders you to do so. So those are the two major things in under HIPAA regulations they were supposed to do, and in our case, they did neither.
Okay, so this is the first case of its kind in Connecticut. The state Supreme Court ruling that patients can sue for negligence if a medical office violates HIPAA regulations, then it has to go now and actually be adjudicated one case at a time in, say, Superior Court. So this is not the end of the road about this specific case that you've been involved with, the Emily Byrne case.
That's right. Really what happened now is the court ruled that we can use the regulations that HIPAA sets forth as the grounds if the medical office fails to follow them can be evidence of its negligence.
Okay. By the way, if you have any questions about this, if you think that there's been a violation of your HIPAA rights at any point in time by a medical office, 203-757-1320, or anything else that you find kind of curious about HIPAA law or something that was explained to you that you didn't understand, give us a call. What about the potential here with all the hacking that is going on, that this is one of those malicious uses of the brainiacs out there who want to get into medical records for the reasons that you mentioned in terms of having information that might be valuable to someone that they could actually hold over this person's head. I could see blackmail. I could see a whole range of things that could take place. I mean, are you worried about this going forward?
A bit. And I think that that's an issue still to be resolved. And I think when we look at that issue, we have to look at it two ways. One, in that data breach kind of situation, it's an intentional act by a third party. And you can't hold a medical office responsible for an intentional criminal act by a third party.
Right, that's not negligence.
That's not negligence.
Unless, what if they weren't tending their computer system well enough? Boy, every time I go to a medical office, they're in the throes of changing their computer system, and they're all bemoaning it and banging on the computers and nurses saying, I'm spending too much time. That happened to me yesterday. So the point is, what if they're not taking all precautions?
And that's the second part of the issue. And I think if you can establish that a medical office simply is either not trying to keep its data confidential in any fashion or doing regular updates and reviews of their office procedures and methods of protecting data, that's a different issue. And I think that could lead to a potential claim against it that would be successful.
Okay. Let me ask you about the father's situation here. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what he was claiming in terms of a paternity suit. So he wanted to find out whether, in fact, he was the dad in this case, or was that what he was trying to do?
Yes. He was trying to establish that he was the parent and was demanding certain visitation rights.
Now, how do the rights that the patient has for confidentiality, just curious, I mean, as a legal question, bump up against somebody's right to know that they, in fact, if they want to take some responsibility, I mean, my goodness, that's a change. But tell us, I mean, you know, how do they kind of collide those two interests?
Well, there's safeguards in place for that. That's what HIPAA was designed to safeguard. If the medical office had responded appropriately, the medical information, I believe, and this never happened, so I'm guessing a bit, I believe the court would have ordered disclosure that would reveal whether he was the child, whether there was a blood test or any other diagnostic procedure done that would either include or exclude him as the father. That would have been fair game. However, in her file was a vast amount of additional information which has nothing to do with the paternity of the child, and that's the information that he got wrongful access to. And in our case, unfortunately, he went on a campaign of harassment and extortion using the information that had no bearing on the paternity issue and used it against her and others close to her in very embarrassing and in public forums.
Okay, I got you. So now this is going to a superior court here in the state of Connecticut, this individual case, her case?
Yes, we'll be going back now to the Bridgeport Superior Court, and we'll hopefully get scheduled for trial in the next 6 to 12 months, I imagine.
All right, very interesting. Attorney Bruce Elstein, thank you for bringing us something that's rather groundbreaking as it relates to privacy, medical records, and HIPAA. I really appreciate it. From Goldman, Grutter, and Woods here in Connecticut, a couple of locations. Thank you for being with us on WATR.
Thank you. Can I just give you the website?
Sure.
If you have any information, we're at www.goldgrugru.com. That's goldgru.com. And our office number in Trumbull is 203-880-5333.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, it's now 11 minutes before 11 o'clock.